Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt.
Hey.
And it's just a great time of year these days, right?
It is. It's the weather's warming up, and my favorite sporting event of the year is going on right now.
Yes, we've sprung forward. We've had the Oscars, and now it's the true rite of spring, the NCAA basketball tournament. I know this show will post on down the road, but we are literally on the eve as we record.
Yeah, we will know, as you listen to this, you'll know who won, but it's still going to be fun to talk about.
Well, now is as good a time as any to bring in our guest today, Pastor and Dr. J.D. Greer, also Southern Baptist President currently. Welcome to the show, J.D.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
So this is also a big time of year for you, right? You correct me if I'm wrong, but you are an UNC alum. That's the University of North Carolina. Am I remembering that right?
Well, actually, no. I'm a UNC fan, but I didn't go to school at Chapel Hill.
See, I step out.
That's okay. It's close enough. But we do have like three of the starters on UNC's team go to our church, regular almost every week. So I have a little vested interest in them too. Of course, we have a lot of state people and Duke people, but State's not even in the tournament, and Duke, they worship the devil. So,
well, now I may have to change my bracket, knowing this inside information.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
well, I'm just saying that they chose the devil as their mascot.
That's right.
Not that they have Zion Williams or anything like that.
I know, J.D., when you and I have talked in the past, I know Harrison Barnes attended Summit and Tyler Zeller, correct? Am I remembering that right?
Oh, he did. That's right, yeah. Some of the coaching team is involved in our church, and they'll bring guys and with them, or we have different people have different relationships, so it's good. We appreciate the ministry.
Well, Harrison, by all accounts, has been a committed believer even since leaving the area there, and is someone that I know we've looked at for some things. So, for whatever role you and Summit played in there, that's just great. Great to hear, to have an influence there.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that.
Okay, so J.D. Greer is with us. Let me just tell you guys a little bit about Pastor J.D. At the age of 27, he became the pastor of a 40-year-old neighborhood church. In the years since, that congregation of 400 has grown to over 5,000 in weekly attendance. Today, the Summit Church, located in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, is one of the fastest-growing churches in North America. J.D.'s messages aren't intended to show people how to live better lives. His goal is to lead people in awe of God's amazing love. Because of his belief in the power of the gospel, J.D. has led the Summit to set a goal of planting more than 1,000 gospel-centered churches in the next 40 years. Pastor J.D. holds a Ph.D. in systematic theology from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He also lived and worked among Muslims in Southeast Asia for 2 years and wrote Breaking the Islam Code, Jesus Continued, Not Got Enough, Gospel, Gaining by Losing, and the soon-to-be-released Above All. That will be available in June. J.D. and his beautiful wife, Veronica, have four ridiculously cute kids, Karis, Alethea, Ryan, Raya, and Adan. J.D., again, thanks for being on the Group Answers show.
Yeah, you got all my kids' names right. I was impressed. So.
Well, it took some effort.
I was impressed, too. That's good. Good job, Brian.
Hey, from Kentucky, we can bring the linguistics.
I know. Let me kick this off, J.D., if you don't mind. I want to talk about your book for a minute, but what motivated you to write this book and make this the cornerstone of your presidency?
Well, when I first sensed that God might be moving me to do this, and was praying about the passions that God had put in my heart and the things that he helped me to see. And one of the things that has been a burden just for our church not really for the SBC at large, but just for our church, is that we really we think about the gospel as being above everything else that we're committed to, everything else that defines us. You know, the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 that the gospel for him was of first importance. In 1 Corinthians 2:2, he says that that he had determined to know nothing among the Corinthians except for Jesus and him crucified. Now, you know, many scholars think that's an overstatement because Paul talks about a lot of things besides Christ and him crucified and in his letters to the Corinthians. But I think it's showing you, those statements are showing you that the gospel had a special place and emphasis, that it really was more important than anything else that was, you know, that he could be about. All the important things that he might, you know, do were not as primary to him as that one essential thing, which was the proclamation of the gospel and gospel ministry. And so, just practically speaking, it's just, you know, we ought to be a gospel people, that when people think about and they talk about us, they should think about and talk about the gospel. And that means that a lot of other things, good things, have to take second place and third place in order to keep the gospel, you know, above all. I always say that, you know, with our community here called the Triangle, the Raleigh-Durham area, you know, I've only got the bandwidth in this community to be known about one or two things. And if I use up that bandwidth with good things, like, I don't know, whether it's, you know, political movements or social movements, it can keep me from using up that bandwidth for the one essential things. And that's a gospel bandwidth I want to be on. So I just, you know, it was a burden that led to everything else of, like, the gospel should be what defines our church. It should be what defines our convention. It ought to be what sets the tone, sets the priority, sets the agenda, and that really, you know, drives everything. I mean, even when you think about you know, Jesus said, you know, there's more joy in heaven over one sinner that repents than over 99 that are already his. You know, what that means as a pastor is that there's literally nothing that I can do among the 99 that brings Jesus as much joy as going after the one with the gospel. Now, that's a big statement for, I mean, I'm a guy who works in the church. I work with the 99. And it means that there's a lot of great stuff that we do. I mean, the New Testament gives me all kinds of things to do with the 99. But none of them bring Jesus as much joy as going after the lost one. It doesn't mean it's the only thing we do, but it means that it's primary in what we do. And so just that is just, you know, this emphasis of the gospel really should be above all in the life of the believer, the life of the church, and in life of whatever missions movement that we're a part of.
Our team has come alongside you to adapt the gospel above all for groups. And so while the book is not scheduled to be available until June, the Bible study for groups is available now, currently. So gospel change, gospel multiplication, gospel mission, gospel grace, gospel community, gospel victory. These are all of the session topics in the adaptation that we've created. Pastor, why these specific topics?
Yeah, no, great question. How would I answer that? So what it did is it started working out, like, what does it mean for the gospel to be above all in the life of a believer or the life of a church? And so we started with gospel change, because that really is the source of everything. Because, you know, for a believer, it's like Martin Luther said, the gospel is not just the beginning point of Christianity. It's what sustains and compels change all the way through. The way Luther said it, one of the ways he said it was, you know, in the gospel, to grow in Christ, to progress, is always to begin again. You go back to the beginning, and that you grow in Christ not by going wider than the gospel, but by going deeper into the gospel. So, you know, what is it the gospel that we're really looking to propel the change in our heart, to make us not more obedient people who just conform to, you know, the laws of religion, but people who genuinely love God and love other people? You know, the kind of the truth of the revolutionary truth of the scriptures is that God doesn't want you to compel you to obey things that you have no interest in. He wants you to become the kind of person who loves to seek God and loves righteousness and just does those things because it's in your nature, and the gospel produces that change. Let's see. You mentioned, what was the next one you mentioned?
Gospel multiplication.
Yeah, gospel multiplication. That's the truth that God intends for every believer to multiply, that when the gospel's at work in you, it's going to multiply, whether it's in the lives of your children or your neighbors. You know, part of this, one of the things I'm doing as president is we've launched this nationwide Hoosier One initiative to say, you know, ordinary people are the tip of the gospel spear. It's not programs or pastors or conventions that make disciples. It's ordinary believers. And that's good news because, you know, Southern Baptists have a lot of ordinary believers out there in the congregations, and each one of them ought to be seeing a disciple, you know, growing up around them. They ought to become a disciple-making disciple. And, you know, I always point out the 39 out of the 40 miracles that took place in the book of Acts take place outside the church where our people are. And so how does the gospel lead you to multiply? I think the next one you said was gospel mission.
Mission, right.
Mission. That's what's going to tie very closely into it. By the way, Brian, I said this, and I don't think you said this when you were talking about the Bible study. I had the privilege in this Bible study of talking with some of the people who have impacted me the most in these areas. Names like Greg Laurie, you know, who's a pastor out in California. When it comes to mission, when it comes to winning other people and Hoosier One and initiative, he has led the way. Rosaria Butterfield, she was the former lesbian literature professor who became a Christian, and now she talks about how to use your home for gospel mission and hospitality. People like Jen Wilkin, who, you know, great teacher of God's word and leader out at the Village Church, who within a complementarian structure, you know, really models gospel change. So what I do is I just begin to explore various areas and say, what's it look like for the gospel to transform this area? Gospel victory, is what kind of faith does the gospel compel? Like when you really believe the gospel, how does it change the way you pray? How does it change the way you think about, you know, difficult situations and obstacles? Talk about, you know, in terms of racial reconciliation, you know, because saying that the gospel is above all does not mean that you cease talking about issues of justice or protecting the vulnerable. It just means you do so with a gospel-focused lens. We talk about gospel above politics and what, you know, that is just like, man, of all, the way I say it kind of tongue-in-cheek to our congregation is, I've got opinions on global warming. I think they're right because if I didn't think they were right, I wouldn't hold them. But, you know, I always tell them that I might be wrong in my opinion on global warming, but I'm not wrong about the gospel. And I don't want to let my opinions on the former global warming keep people from hearing me on the latter. And so I will restrain myself. I'll restrain myself in tying my opinions on secondary things to our church's reputation and to my messaging from the pulpit. I'll restrain myself so that I can keep that bandwidth open for clarity and gospel proclamation and try to take away any obstacle that will get in the way of people hearing the message and believing.
So others that you sat down with or that we captured it with, David Platt, Vance Pittman at Las Vegas, Walter Strickland, Kevin Smith, and Dr. Al Mohler. And Chris, yep. I don't know if you had an opportunity to take a look at the study or not, but in terms of like just a practical application, J.D., tell me if you agree with this or not, this in terms of its intent, just guides groups along this path to really understanding what this gospel saturation looks like, this gospel above all message, that it does trump all things. Like Pastor said, I may be wrong about global warming, but I tell you what I'm not wrong about, and that's the gospel.
Yeah, that's the question I was going to ask, Pastor. As group leaders look at this study, what can people in their group gain from engaging this message specifically in a group setting?
Well, I mean, let's just be real practical here for a minute, and let's kind of acknowledge a spade is a spade here. If I told you that your church had a chance to go through a Bible study with David Platt, Rosaria Butterfield, Al Mohler, Vance Pittman, Jen Wilkin, and all the other people that you just named.
Greg Laurie, Walter Strickland,
It's not bad.
Who wouldn't want to do that for 8 weeks? Yeah. You know, sit down and say, like, look at that conversations with these people. And I got the chance to be like a learner alongside of them. Yeah, I mean, I'm throwing stuff out there and I'm asking questions. But man, it's just I was blown away with what was heard, you know, just from these guys. So I mean, that's one thing. Just let's just kind of acknowledge that. Man, there's some very, you know, just wonderfully wise people that are speaking into it.
A lot of wisdom, but a lot of unique experiences in that context as well.
Yeah, like, exactly. I sat down and talked to Rosario Butterfield and Greg Laurie back to back about the same subject. You know, two wonderful to, you know, 10,000 people in a stadium. The other one hosts, you know, three lesbians in her home for a meal. That's a different way they do evangelism. And so, you know, it was a great experience. So that, I think one of the things that people have a need for and that I think they'll gain through this study is just asking, like, what should I be doing? I mean, I go onto Facebook, they're going to say, and I see, like, everybody, you know, posting all these things, and I don't know, when am I supposed to be posting, and when am I supposed to be silent, and I don't know which causes are supposed to be mine, and people are telling me, I got to care about this one, I got to care about that one. I think what this does begins to give you a grid for how to ask and answer questions like that. Like, what really should I be about? What should take up, you know, my own personal messaging? What you know, what activities should be involved in? How do I know I'm living out the Great Commission? God hasn't called me to preach to thousands of people in a stadium, somebody might say, or hadn't called me to, you know, go be a missionary. But what do I do? How do I use my home? Even if you're like, I'm shy to talk to people, it's, well, how do I use my home in doing this? And what does it mean for me to be a faithful representative of the gospel? How do I deal with political stuff? How do I deal with teaching my children to grow in the gospel? I just feel like this really, what we do is we try to do what Paul did in 1 Corinthians 2 that I mentioned. He says, I didn't want to know anything among you except for Jesus Christ and him crucified. We said, all right, let's put that in the middle of first importance, and then let's work our way out into all these different areas of the Christian life and see how it changes our perspective.
You know, training your volunteers and leaders is important, but do you ever feel like you don't know where to start? That's why Lifeway Leadership developed Ministry Grid. With Ministry Grid's library of over 3,000 training videos, the work has been done for you, and you'll be able to train everyone in your church. And this is training you can trust. Each Ministry Grid video features an experienced ministry leader who has been where you are now. You can customize any training by adding videos, PDFs, YouTube videos, and more. And now, Ministry Grid has one plan with one price that gives you unlimited access to train your entire church. Just go to ministrygrid.com to learn more. Once again, that is ministrygrid.com.
JD, so you're right. And to the message of this book and the Bible study, the gospel above all, I mean, that is a simple charge, to be honest. I mean, the gospel above all, I think, gospel-centered believers would all say, well, yeah, of course. So tell me this. What are the traps? What are some traps that maybe even small groups, church or a small group, could find themselves in, and that would be placing other things above the gospel, and how can this message speak to some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really where the rubber meets the road, Brian, because yeah, I think we all think of ourselves as gospel people, but I think there are these traps of it's whenever something begins to displace the gospel in its centrality. Let me use an analogy or a correlated thought here. The you know, they say that an idol becomes an idol, an IDOL becomes an idol in our life, not because it's a bad thing, but because it's a good thing that takes on too much weight. The word for weight, one of the words for glory in the Old Testament is a word that literally means weight. And an idol is something, when you give it glory, you give it so much weight in your life that it just shapes everything else that you think. It's like, I've got to have money or friendship or romance. I got to have that so badly that it affects everything and I can't be happy without it. Well, in the same way, there are certain good things in our lives that can take on too much weight. And it's like, it's not that politics aren't important, it's that the gospel has a lot more weight than any political platform. It's not that other agendas are not good. It's that the gospel has more weight on it. I think that's one of the temptations. The other temptation is one that's just inherent in the heart of mankind, and that is we love to swap out gospel for religion. Meaning, like, the human heart. Martin Luther said this: the human heart is hardwired for laws, for rules, for standards to obtain, and for, like, inauthentic righteousness. And what I mean by that is I learn to act in a certain way even when my heart is not there. I've done that all my life. I forced myself to be kind to people. I remember getting really burned out early on in my Christian life and just being very upset, you know, before God, because I was like, God, I've forced myself to be kind to people and to be polite, but I don't love people. I you know, I'm jealous of them, and I find myself nursing hatreds. And is this really what you want? It's for me to be kind when my heart wants to go the other direction. And God, you use that as a point to begin to turn me to a solution to my heart that was different than just morality and laws. And I think a lot of small groups, a lot of churches, they're encumbered in this do that Christianity that is do this and do that. Around our church, we call that doo-doo Christianity, just nothing but a list of do's. But you know, a religion that doesn't have the power to actually transform the heart into loving God and loving others. That's what Luther said. Luther said the great commandment, Martin Luther said the great commandment is an inherent dilemma. He said, because on one side of the dilemma, he said, your heart can't be loved your heart can't be commanded to love things it doesn't already love. You know, I hate mayonnaise. And Brian, you're a pretty big boy. I've seen you. You know, you might be able to compel me to eat mayonnaise, but you gotta make me love it. And so the same thing, you can compel somebody to obey God, but you can't make them love God. He said the other side of that, Luther said the other side of the dilemma is he said, you know, not only can you not command somebody to love something they don't love, he said, once they've learned to love it, they don't need a command anymore. He said, you know, I would say I love to eat a ribeye steak. You ever have to command me to sit down and eat a ribeye steak, I'll just do it, you know, because I love it.
Pittsburgh style. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. You remember it. Yeah, I appreciate you knowing that. But, you know, so it's, Luther said, the dilemma of the great commandment is that God is giving us a command to do something that by definition can't really be commanded. And that is to love him. And so only the gospel can produce that kind of love. So I think there's a temptation for us to switch out gospel power. There's a temptation to switch out gospel agendas with secondary agendas, and a temptation to switch out gospel power with religion.
You know, to your point, I don't know that we've ever seen a culture that's so replete with all kinds of messages and agendas. And social media just fills the world up with competing positions, and we're navigating them constantly. So I think it's a very timely message for all the reasons that you say. Speaking of politics, a sensitive subject, one of the chapters in the book and also a full session in the study that we've created engages the tension that we're seeing more and more between the gospel and what I'll just call politics. I feel like we've talked about it on the show from time to time. It's not something that we spend a ton of time on, but I feel like we're in a very divisive age when it comes to this subject. So I know you've got some experience with this, and it's something that I've seen you address very competently, but what's the church's role in politics, or I should say rightful role in politics, and what are some ways a church can view the gospel above politics practically?
Yeah, good question. So I think there's several pitfalls that we can fall into here. One is, I've already talked about it, and that is just letting other agendas take up this, you know, one primary agenda. Jesus in Luke 12 was approached by a brother who was complaining that his older brother would not share the inheritance with him. A legitimate justice complaint. And Jesus's response was to say, man, who made me a judge over you? And then he preached a sermon on greed that would have applied to both brothers. And what you're seeing there is not that Jesus didn't care about justice in that issue. He certainly did. He just knew that if he got involved in that, there'd be a lot of people, you know, waiting for him to adjudicate the particulars of their cases. And he was just like, no, I came to seek and save the lost. And I've got to show restraint in getting too involved in some of these things, because that's not why I came. It's not that it's not important, it's just not why I came. So I think that's one danger that we can let it, we can cause our opinions about, you know, whether it's universal health care or the best way to empower the poor or what the right way to deal with, you know, past racial injustices is. I think there's 100 different things. Christians can agree that we need to empower the poor. Christians need to agree that racial injustices need to be redressed. But as far as like how, and what the right strategy is, that's a place that we can show restraint. Another way that we can go off is by trying to so separate our gospel from, you know, justice issues and political issues that we never speak about it. You know, I'm just here to preach the gospel, and I don't talk about things like racial injustice or abortion or, you know, just issues that are going to affect the common good. And so I think learning to live in that tension of how do you speak to justice issues, but with the restraint that to go along with a gospel person. I think that's a tension. One final thing that kind of relates to that is, you've got certain things that look so clear right now to us, but given a 10 years, 15 years, you look back at them and you say, man, it's just not as clear as it seemed back then. And when we tie the church's reputation to that, I remember, back in the days of the Iraq War, for a while, everybody was totally, we just saw it. And I remember a group of churches wanted to sign a petition that would, sign on to in support of the Iraq War. Well, I mean, now we look back on it and say, hey, maybe that wasn't the best thing for the church to be declaring and making opinions about. But then it would have been helpful to show some restraint. I think we got to show that same restraint in policies that looks clear to us right now, but are not, are not areas that the church is neither called nor competent to get involved in and kind of legislate the particulars of those. And I think we have to show that restraint.
That's exactly right. We got just a few minutes here. I just want to ask you real quick. You mentioned all these people that are these contributors, and I don't know. A lot has happened since then. This was back in the fall, but you probably don't have to think back too hard to remember that what you guys were dealing with. I think, did two hurricanes blow through while we were trying to get all these video shoots scheduled?
Yeah, pretty much, yep.
Yeah, so, the experience with the video shoot, the weather, I remember managing schedules with Veronica. As you sat down with these guys, Jen, David, Greg, Rosaria, Vance, Walter, Kevin, and Dr. Moeller, is there a singular thing that you remember, like, in those moments where you're like, wow? Do you remember a moment that it was just somebody said something and it really stuck?
Well, I remember Rosaria walking through just what it meant to live with gospel hospitality and feel like at the end, she needed to lead me to the sinner's prayer so I could ask Jesus into my heart again. I remember that. I remember just being so convicted by Greg Laurie's just effusive evangel, just how he just sort of drips mm-hmm. concern for people coming to Jesus. I remember that one. Man, there was some hearing Kevin Smith, who is an African-American leader in our Southern Baptist Convention, and Al Mohler talk about things that Christians should be agreed on in politics and areas they need to show, restraint. That was really helpful too. So, anyway, it was, those are some moments. And all of the film crew just did a great job. I just had a great time with them. Well, I hope that comes through in the video because we're just walking around and just having a good time. And they're making fun of me the whole time. I'm doing the slow walking, the infamous LifeWay slow walk that you guys have in my video where it's like, you're going to slow it down. And my kids are like, Dad, why do you walk in slow motion everywhere? Why don't you walk normal? I'm like, I don't know.
It's just part of the show, Pastor. It's just part of the show. It's just what we do. Yeah, so that's The Gospel Above All. The book will be available in June, and the Bible study is available now. And there isn't much left unaddressed in what we're talking about. So for those groups that are interested in this sort of thing and how you can more pull the gospel into a practical way and make it a part of you, like what JD is talking about, I would recommend this.
Want to let you know about another podcast that's on our network. We talked about Ask Me Anything, but there's one called Making Disciples. If you haven't heard it lately, it's hosted by Robbie Gallaty and Chris Swain. They're a part of the LifeWay Leadership Podcast Network family, and they've recently covered topics like, can you have fun in ministry? How gaming connects with discipleship and discipleship lessons from Israel. So just look up Making Disciples on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today. And Brian, I want to point out the fact that J.D. Greer said that you're beefy.
Yeah. Well, actually, he said big boy. I think that could
beefy.
Go either way.
Or
yeah.
Beefy.
So Chris, if someone, it's okay. It's all right. So if someone wanted to comment or give us or rate us, they could do that, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking about our show or the Group Answers show.
Or any of the ones on the network, but it's particularly ours. If you want to go to Apple, iTunes, that's the best place to do it. And just give us a rating and a comment helps people actually see the podcast.
Makes a difference.
It does.
And we read them and we talk about it.
We do. We've changed some things. We used to have a third co-host and people didn't like him.
And now he's not here anymore.
We cut him.
That's right, he's gone.
Yep.
So if you want to follow JD, you can go to jdgreer.com, and that's jdgreear.com. You can follow JD on Twitter. Same thing, JD Greer. And Chris has already mentioned it, but then there is the weekly podcast, Ask Me Anything. It would be highly recommended. You can make that a part of your regular podcast schedule. So you might want to check that out as well. Pastor, thank you so much for being with us. We know how busy you are, not only the pastor of a church, but also as the current Southern Baptist Convention president. Appreciate you and your heart, and we're so excited about this study, and just thank you for, I know last fall was not easy trying to manage all that, but thanks for hanging in there with us.
My pleasure. I love partnering with Lifeway, and I love that Ask Me Anything podcast that y'all, and work with y'all on, because it's fun to be able to give like 7-8 minute answers to questions I get all the time. From whether it's dating or theology questions or kind of practical life questions. So it's been great to have you guys as a partner.
It's a sister show. We're also a part of the Lifeway Leadership Network.
Yep.
Podcast network.
Yep.
I'm the brother, y'all sister. Just make that clear.
And I will have you know that our show spiked when you were talking about us. So thank you for that.
All right.
It did. We hit the top 100, which we were very excited.
JD, thanks for being with us. That's going to do it for us on this episode. Thank all you listeners for being with us as well. I'm Brian Daniel for Chris Surratt and JD Greer. Look forward to being with you next time.